Welcome to another episode of the Dads Making a Difference podcast. Today, I'm having a conversation with Justin Donald. Entrepreneur Magazine calls Justin the Warren Buffett of lifestyle investing. As the founder of Lifestyle Investor and a master of low-risk cash flow investing, Justin's ethos is to create wealth without creating a job. He excels at simplifying complex financial strategies, structuring deals, and disciplined investment systems that consistently yield profitable results. Well, as dads, we all want to have more financial success. But today, Justin's going to talk about how after only 21 months of investing, following his straightforward investment system, he was able to create enough passive income for him and his wife to quit their jobs. Justin was able to then go on to build a business, to do deals with over 200 companies, build his net worth to over nine figures, but most importantly, do it in a way where he was able to maintain a family-centric lifestyle. So yes, today we are going to dive into his book, The Lifestyle Investor, The 10 Commandments for Passive Cash Flow Investing. But we're really going to dive in to what it means to be a dad, a husband, a family man, who is seeking financial independence and financial success while still focusing on the most important thing, our family. So Justin is going to give you the three levels of financial independence you're going to target. He's going to give you the steps to get started right now, no matter where you are in those three levels. He's going to give you a free gift that you can utilize right now to know what the next step is for you. But he's also going to talk about how we can bring our families into this conversation. And Justin and I dive into a monthly, yearly system that you can implement with your spouse and with your kids that's going to help you get on the same page so that you can paint the dream lifestyle that you really want. So you can create a life by design that's not by default. This episode of the Dads Making a Difference podcast with Justin Donald starts right now. You are listening to the Dads Making a Difference podcast, the number one podcast for men driven to live a life of significance. Men who want to make a difference in the lives of their families, in their business, and in the world around them. My name is Cam Hall, founder of Fight the Dadbot and leader of the Dads Making a Difference Mastermind. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. Now, let's dive in. Justin, welcome to the Dads Making a Difference podcast. Great to see you today.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Cam. I'm excited to be here and, you know, chat about life, chat about family, chat about being a dad and, you know, all the things that we're going to get into.
I'm excited. I've been excited for this conversation for some time since the first time that I was able to connect with you. I knew that you had a passion for being a dad, being a husband, and a passion for building lifestyle. And we're going to get into that in this conversation. And you are the author of The Lifestyle Investor. We're going to get into the book because I think that's a great place to start. Because you start your book talking about your background. And often on this podcast, I'll start, hey, tell us a little bit about your background. But you dive right into it in the book. And you do it in such a way that is very endearing to your family, but also set standards for yourself and your vision moving forward. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your mom and your dad and how they instilled maybe some work ethic and beliefs about money in you as you grew up?
Yeah, you know, I think we take both good and bad from parents, mentors, role models. I've got a great relationship with my parents. I love them dearly. I talked them into moving to Austin here with me, which I never thought would happen. And so I get to see them with much more regularity these days. But my dad, you know, really instilled work ethic at a young age. I mean, that guy could work. He would put in the time, the hours. He was just always committed. And I would watch him set goals. I would watch him achieve those goals. I'd watch him work harder, stay longer, do more, show up early, all the things that you need to do to actually accomplish goals if you're not on pace. I mean, he would do them. And so I learned at a young age that that work ethic is really important. And, you know, before you recognize skill and efficiency and all these other things, like that is so incredibly important because I didn't know what I was good at. I didn't know how to be more efficient, you know, with less time. But I did know that if I followed a playbook and I outworked everyone else, I was likely to outperform them.
I love that. What was what was it like for you growing up? Like, what was life like for you as a young man, as a boy? You know, some people have their stories just like, I was hawking, you know, chocolate bars at school when I was in fourth grade and I got my entrepreneurial spirit from that. But for you, what did it look like growing up into, you know, to a point now where you're a successful business owner, businessman, investor, but it started somewhere. Where was that?
Yeah, you know, so I get that work ethic from my dad. I get the relationship side from my mom. My mom always had great friends and great relationships, and people just adore her. And I watched how she interacted with people. And so for me, a really important, really integral part of my life is the, you know, those relationships that are closest to me, those that, you know, I've really prioritized, you know, to get quality time with, to be intentional, not just let life happen, but to actually be intentional and, you know, live more by design, plan it out, make sure that, you know, trips are scheduled in the calendar, or just evenings together or breakfast together, whatever it is. So that part I learned from my mom. And at a young age, thankfully, I didn't care for this at the age, but at a young age, my parents are like, we're not going to pay for you anymore. So you've got to go get a job. Like, if you want to make money, you got to make money like the rest of us. And so in seventh grade, I find myself with a newspaper. So I had a friend that was doing, you know, he had like a newspaper route, and I always thought that would be really cool. But I had this opportunity they found in the newspaper back when you go through the classified ads and, you know, you need a job and you just circle all the ones there. And then you call and most people say no to a 13-year-old kid. And I found a place that said yes. And this wasn't a delivery route. This was actually selling newspaper subscriptions door to door, which I was horrible at. I mean, I was as bad as it gets. This is a 100% commission job. That I made no money at for weeks.
At 13.
And people are like, why didn't you quit? Like, if you talk to people today, they're like, well, why didn't you quit? The thought never crossed my mind. I don't think I just think I showed up and I figured I would figure it out. I don't know that that even existed as an option in my mind. And luckily I figured it out. I got good at it. I removed the taking it personal when someone says no and assigned it to just not interested, right? So it wasn't they were rejecting me, they were rejecting the offer. And then I just learned how to work with people and handle objections and build rapport, skills that are very valuable today.
Yeah, absolutely. And skills that are important in sales, which I know that later in your life, you got into a sales type position that started as well. But I think as a 13-year-old young man going door to door, how intimidating that could have been at first. It could have been really easy for you to just pack it in after the first 100 no's. Not many of us would make it that far even and just say, no, this isn't for me, but it kept you going. I think it points to the resilience that you learned from your father and the work ethic. And I think also you share in the book about how your mom, it was always relationships first and taking care of people. And there's even something to be said about in your interactions when someone says no, you don't take it personally. Because I think there's a confidence that you must have and you have growing up. And I've listened to your podcast. I've watched a lot of your stuff over the last couple of months. There's a confidence that you have. It's like, hey, I'm secure in who I am. And you saying no to me is, yeah, you're just not ready yet. And I'll come back to you later. So
that's right.
Did this all play in? Was this easy for you? I think is my question. Was this easy for you or was it hard over, you know, your teenage years and as a young man starting your own business and getting into that sales environment?
Well, people that follow the story today or just get to know me today or you know, maybe they read my book or listen to my podcast, it probably sounds easy. It probably feels like, oh, yeah, he figured it out quickly. Some things I'm a quick study on, but a lot of things I'm not. And in sales, I was not a quick study. I did not do well for a while. I did not understand that you had to handle objections and that people would basically give you the same excuses or objections every time. It was just, it's a series of how many, what's the number of things that people could say and which ones would consistently, come up and figuring that out. So it seems like maybe I was good at it, but I'm telling you, it was a process for me. Now, once I transitioned and started selling Cutco when I was in college, that came really easy for me because I already did the hard work. You know, I already sold a product that people didn't want, that didn't have a good guarantee when people already had a newspaper subscription. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I had to get really good at handling objections when they say, well, I already, you know, I subscribed to the Chicago Tribune, or I subscribed to, you know, whatever the paper is, the Daily Herald. And to give them, you know, a paper that's inferior, that's smaller, you know, how do I get them to do that? So when I actually sold a product that was high quality with a really good guarantee, I just learned, if I work harder than everyone else, I'm going to outperform them. My sales ratio is very high because it's easy to sell. So I just need to play the numbers game, do more appointments than anyone else. My closing ratio, if I improve my skills, my closing ratio will get better. My average order size will get better. But the way I win actually isn't either of those. It's in volume.
What did you learn about yourself during that process? What did you learn about yourself, your strengths, maybe your areas of growth? You speak to the power of mindset a lot in your book. But what did you learn about Justin during that time?
Well, I learned that as good as I thought I was at sales, I was definitely better and more equipped at working with and managing, you know, people, teams, leading. And I got a lot more, you know, joy and fulfillment from the development of other people. Hmm. And so once I had that comparison in college, I ran an office as, you know, branch manager. So it's like I opened up my own business under the umbrella of Cutco, and I really didn't know what I was doing. I mean, this is my first entrepreneurial endeavor, and it's way different than sales. Yeah. So what I found, though, was I really enjoyed the process. I really enjoyed connecting with people. I really enjoyed seeing them succeed. And it showed me that I also could get outside of that linear transaction. So this was something that I read in Cash Flow Quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki. I was reading this about the same time. It's on there, right?
Yeah, it's over there.
Yeah. That book revolutionized the world for me, the world of business. And what I saw was, like, sales is super linear. I've got to put in X amount of time. I'm going to earn a return on those dollars. But if I can build a business, that's an asset that can create, you know, production, volume, sales with or without me. Yeah. And if I do a good job of building up people and training people, then we can get some pretty good results, and I don't have to be there all the time. And so not only do I work less, it's more enjoyable work because I'm coaching. And then there's the reward of developing other people where otherwise they wouldn't get this shot at that young of an age. And that was really exciting for me.
That's amazing. And I love that you did the Weatherman segue there, said you didn't have to be there all the time, because in my head, I'm like, so when did you become a father? And when did you become a husband? And because that plays into this. And that's why I was really excited about having you on, because yes, you're a very successful entrepreneur. You've done these amazing things. The book is incredible. We're going to make sure everybody gets a copy of the book. But for you, you are a family man with a business, not a businessman with a family. And I know that's passionate to you. You're part of John Vroman's Front Row Dads. You've been part of that right from the beginning, right?
That's right.
And so let's speak to, in your journey, when did you become a husband and when did you become a father, and how did that play into this?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and even to go full circle, so John Vroman is one of my closest friends, an amazing guy, has built this incredible organization with like-minded people that just want to up-level their game as a husband, as a father, you know, just really leading the family. And, you know, one of the cool things about the book is the whole genesis of the Lifestyle Investor actually came from a friend that just really, I had several of them. They're like, you need to write a book. And I just didn't want to write a book or know how to write a book. I wasn't sure, you know. I mean, on my dreams list, I thought it'd be cool to write a book, but I don't know. I didn't consider myself an author. Yeah. But one of my friends said, hey, Justin, what if you die and your daughter never learns these lessons? Mm. Like, how is that going to feel? Wow. Yeah. And that was a powerful wake up call for me, so much so that the next day I started writing the book, and the book was dedicated to her. but all the proceeds of the book have been donated to fight human trafficking. So 100% of everything this book has ever generated, and then some, goes to efforts that, you know, help protect families and kids and all that, because it is really important to me. And I would have never guessed in a million years that, you know, enough people would find the content that I find interesting also interesting. Yeah. So it was a nice blessing for it to become a number one Wall Street Journal bestseller. But as of January of 2023, it's sold enough copies to be a top 1% of all books ever sold, which is really humbling. And it shows kind of like that bigger picture, bigger purpose of what the funds can do. So it's not just about helping people buy their time back and create financial freedom. It does that.
Yeah.
But it's also helping real people buy real freedom back that they've lost, that they should have never lost in the first place. So that to me is really important. But the whole idea, like, I feel like I played lip service to the family man first, businessman second in the beginning, because in my head, I felt like, yes, I'm being more intentional. I'm more intentional than these dads. So therefore, you know, I'm winning the game. Like I'm good at this. And, you know, I remember my wife saying, and my wife says some great things. I don't always want to hear them in the moment, but, you know, I reflect later and they're just so profound. And, you know, one of the things she said to me is, well, are you wanting to compare yourself to, you know, average dads or dads that aren't average? Like that's your benchmark. And that really, you know, that really stuck. Many times has said, when you say yes to something else, you're saying no to the family by default, which for me, it was really, I enjoy saying yes to things. Like I like the variety, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't ever look at it in that context. And when I looked at my schedule, in my head, I'm thinking I'm a family man. But when I looked at my schedule said, no, you're a businessman and you squeeze family in around it. And so that was the great litmus test for me, because I think your schedule dictates your priorities. And I had mine all messed up. So even though I thought I was doing a good job, I had this epiphany of how much better a job I could do if I actually put my family in first and then scheduled work around it. And so that's really how I've lived life for, you know, many years now. But it was a conscious shift. It was an intentional shift that things do not, I have these boundaries. Work stops here. Work, you know, it starts here. It stops here. It doesn't intrude on the weekend. It doesn't intrude into the evenings. It just, you know, when my family's around, I spend time with them first. And then if we happen to do less business, if we lose a deal, if we whatever, I would rather lose it on the business side than that connection with the family. Someone once, by the way, described to me that business, because entrepreneurs, it's so easy to default into the business because we're good at it, because we're recognized for it, because there's ego or there's certainty, there's confidence. So it's easier to default to business than default to father, you know, being a father, being a parent, being a spouse. Being a husband, right? Like it's much easier. But someone described it to me once as business is a rubber ball and family is a glass ball. And the business is malleable. I mean, that rubber ball, that can bounce. It can get beat up. It can bounce a few times. It hits the ground. It might, you know, get some skid marks on it, but you can put that back together. You can reiterate, there's always more deals and more business. The family's a glass ball. You drop that one, it shatters. Yeah. You may not be able to put that back together. And so we want to prioritize the most important priority.
And I'm sure you've seen this as well, working with as many men as you have in your career and being around guys that are really driven people. Like they're really driven, they're high achieving, and they want to do this for their family. But in that process, they drop the glass ball and then they are scrambling to put those little pieces back together again, and it will never be the same. And I think there's guys, whether it's work or business, because there's guys listening to this right now who go to work every day, but they still take their work home with them. And whether that means they're in an office at home doing work or to just appear and their work is at home with them. They're not being present. They're not being intentional with their time. And they're not really living the lifestyle that inside they really want to live. They think they're working towards something. And you say something in your book that I wrote down, thought it was really impactful. It's like, we're always working for this thing that we see happening in the future without making it happen in the present. And it's just, we have this vision. Oh, this is my vision. These are my goals. But you're always chasing. And I find that it's very easy for men who feel responsibility to provide, to be successful, to have a standard, that we're always chasing something. I'd love you to share a little bit about, how do we stop chasing? How do we start really being intentional in the moment? What was the turning point for you? And you said, no, my lifestyle is going to be my priority.
Well, my wife had something else, pretty profound that she said to me. I remember one time I was like, well, I'm doing, I'm working hard for the family, And she's like, wait a minute. We've got enough. You're not working for us. If you're going to be honest with yourself, you're working for you, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not asking you for more. Mm-hmm. We don't need more. We want more of you. We're not asking for more money. When have I asked you for that?
Yeah.
So please don't fool yourself into thinking you're doing it for us, because you're not. And that was a wake up call for me. Like, I had justified that I should work more, work harder, work outside boundaries because I could produce more, but they weren't wanting the more money. They were wanting the more time, and I was robbing them of that. And so for me, I try to do my best to listen to people that have, a discerning voice, that have great insights. My wife's one of them. I've got some other friends that are. And sometimes it's like, I need to be critical of myself. Am I fooling myself here? And when I am, I need to own up to it. So that's part of it. And then the other part of it is, I did start recognizing that the goalposts moved for me. I remember saying, like, when I hit this number, or when I, have started a business that, achieves X, or whatever it is. But whenever you get there, that's never enough. There's always something else. And so now that I know that that's the reality, I know that I just need to plan, like, whatever the thing is, it's not more important than family. If I'm saying yes to more business, I'm saying no to family. Which one do I need to instill values more in? Which one do I need to, like, help prepare? And that time with family is limited, right? It is scarce, and it will disappear. I mean, my daughter's 11 now.
Yeah.
I can't even believe that I have literally 7 more summers with her.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That is also mind-boggling. Yes. Yeah. So that's a scary thought, but it makes that time so much more precious. And I'm just glad I realize it, because it's going to be gone. And if I had recognized this sooner, I could have been, I feel like I've done a good job, but what's the litmus test? Who am I comparing to? Could I have done a better job? And if so, can I start that now? Like, when's the next best time? Well, right now. And not to beat myself up for what I didn't do, but to show up in a way that serves the best today.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I want to go there next. And I'd love that you shared. Your wife sounds very wise. And to ask you that question, you're not doing this for us. That's a realization. A trusted mentor of mine that I look up to, very successful business, and he's my elder by probably 25 years. He said at one point in his life, he came home to his wife in the house. She said, "You're coming home with a fistful of dollars to a house full of strangers." And that was a turning point for him. And I keep that in the back of my head. Like, am I pushing? What am I pushing for? Am I pushing for my family, or am I pushing for me? And selfishly, I love that you brought up ego, because for all of us, ego can play a part in distracting us from what our true calling is. And so thank you for sharing that.
Especially for A personalities, you may not realize it, but if you are a go-getter in any way, shape, or form, you may not even be a go-getter, in your work, you likely are, but even if you're not you, but you're a go-getter in the gym, it's like you are a go-getter somewhere. And so you are more susceptible to ego than anyone else.
That's true. Let's go to the timing piece, because you mentioned not, oh, I missed the time frame. Like what? And you said the best time to start is now. Like, when is the best time to start? And I want, how old were you? I know you say in the book, but how old were you when you finally realized, hey, this is a pathway we can take. This investment strategy works. This lifestyle, I'm a lifestyle investor. And I want you to explain what that means. But the best time is now. But how old were you when you really got into that?
So I was early 30s when I really started figuring out this is the way to do it. You know, for a while I debated, you know, how do I really buy my time back? How do I really create financial freedom? Could it be this path with multifamily? Is it this path with business and entrepreneurship? Is it this path with mobile home parks? Like, there's just so many options out there. I didn't know what the best option was. And really, I just decided I'm a really good copycat. I don't need to reinvent the wheel. Find someone that did it, copy their playbook, and be as close to precise as you can. Don't innovate until you actually have expertise. And I mean, that's literally the playbook that I followed. I found a mentor. I followed the playbook, copied everything humanly possible. And, you know, in a short period of time, I was able to, you know, buy our first mobile home park, which in one fell swoop replaced my wife's income. She was able to retire as a teacher. Bought another one that replaced our survival income, and bought a third one that replaced our lifestyle income. So it was in a very short period of time that we went from no passive income to total financial freedom. And I think the big thing that I hope people hear is that we had financial freedom before we were ever millionaires. Yeah. A lot of people think you got to have all this money and you got to have tens of millions of dollars. We literally had financial freedom before we ever had $1 million in the bank. And that time freedom is more important than any of the dollars. It's more important than the accumulation of dollars, right? Yeah. And so that was a powerful lesson to me, that you didn't need a big nest egg. You didn't need millions of dollars. You could do it by using, you know, borrowing money, whether it be from a bank or raising money from friends and family. And that was just huge for us.
Can you talk to the three levels of financial independence and financial freedom that you talked to in the book? Because I think for people right now, they're like, oh yeah, it sounds like you said before, it sounds easy. Yeah, it worked for you. You were good at this. I'm not good at that. I don't know what to do, which, by the way, if you're listening to this, get the book, you'll know what to do because you map it out. But what are the three levels of financial independence? Because I think people just see the end point. They just see where you're at. Like, oh yeah, doesn't have to work. Doesn't have to go into the office. But that's not where it starts. So go ahead. What are the three levels?
I mean, and also I just want to say that even though I don't have to work, I get to work.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And so it's just different. You get to choose how much you work and what things you work on, and you can be more selective with what actually fulfills you, and ways that you can utilize your God-given talents and gifts. And so for me, that was huge. It wasn't like I just wanted to retire and sip pina coladas all the time. It was fun taking time off, but I was ready to like do something but also like help my friends on this path, this journey that I figured out, because I noticed a lot of them couldn't do the stuff I was doing. So I need to, you know, help create this type of financial freedom amongst my peers and friends and people I want to spend time with. Otherwise, they can't go travel with me. So, but the way I look at it is you're probably not going to A to Z, right? You're starting out. I always talk about the first number that I want to look at is my survival income. What does it cost me to live for the year? And then break that down on a monthly basis. What is that survival cost? And this is not lifestyle. So it's not going on trips. It's not eating out. It's like, what is the number that you need just to survive? And for some people, you're not, for most people, I'd say in one fell swoop, you're not going to hit that number. It might be getting some passive income that covers your car payment, and then getting some more, you do another deal, and now you're covering your utilities as well. And then you do another deal and you're covering your mortgage and then another one. And so it's just going to add up over time. But when you can get survival income, I'm telling you, a weight will be lifted off your shoulders. Yeah. For me, it was a physical weight. Like I felt like I could breathe. I felt like, and it wasn't like I hated what I was doing.
Yeah.
I just felt trapped and I felt like I'd been doing it a long time. And if it were up to me, I would do it differently. I would work less hours. I would focus just on the areas of that business that I enjoyed, not all the things that I was doing. I wouldn't be afraid to outsource. I wouldn't be afraid to bring people in. There's just so many things that hitting that survival income number gave me the freedom to do.
Yeah.
I could have done it before, but mentally I had a block. It was hard to, you know, put the risk in someone else doing it who may not do it as well as me, when I can just do it because I know my results. Because if we don't earn what we need, then it impacts lifestyle. So
yep.
Having that component was huge. And then the second one is lifestyle. What does it actually cost you to live? Everything, full-fledged. Eating yep. out the way that you are eating out and traveling the way that you're traveling. The activities that you're doing. What is today's lifestyle on an annual basis? Break it down into the monthly. And then I also like, I mean, I didn't get into this as much in the book. A lot of people, they're income is greater than their lifestyle. So how do you replace the earned income?
Yeah.
The next step I talked about in the book though, is really how do you get to your ideal lifestyle? You know, what, mm-hmm. what would an ideal life look like? What things would you be doing? How much would that cost? And what does that break down to on a monthly basis? And now you have these targets of what to do, what you need to do on a monthly basis to equal a certain lifestyle or a certain survival dollar amount, but how do we work towards lifestyle?
I love that. I love that you said just subtly there, the monthly cost of living, more or less. Like, what do you need to survive every month? What do you need to survive and then maintain your lifestyle every month? And you keep saying monthly, and this is something that's in the book. Let's look for monthly cash flow as opposed to annually. Why do you say that?
The annual number is intimidating. I mean, it feels a lot bigger than it really is. The monthly is just such a more manageable number. And most of the way that we live life is on a monthly basis, car payments, mortgage payments, rent, mm-hmm. utilities. So there is a cash flow component to it. There's a natural cadence to that. And so to me, it shows up as a much more achievable or believable outcome.
Okay. Super helpful. But
and by the way, the earlier someone can do this in their life, whether it be age or whether it be, you know, role or level of success or how high they've worked up the corporate ladder, the earlier you can do this, the less money it's going to take to actually achieve financial freedom.
Yeah.
Right. Because sometimes you move up the ladder and you earn more and we want more nice things and lifestyle creep kicks in and all of a sudden you're spending a lot more than what you had anticipated. And then it's even harder to leave. It's even harder to invest more and make the pivot because you really wear the golden handcuffs.
Yeah, you do. You do.
I say that respectfully because I've been there and I lived that.
Yeah, I do too. And I felt that for a long time. So yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. You mentioned the live the life you dream of. And I want to go there next because we're not living this life on our own. You're a husband, you're a father. I'm a husband and father. And when I dream of the life I want to live, it's not just me in those dreams. And so how do we bring our families, like as fathers, how do we engage our families in this process, our wives, our kids, in this idea of this lifestyle investment where we want to live our life to the fullest?
Well, to me, it's being on the same page. You know, I had a friend that said, you know, he thought everything was going really well in his family. He was real proud of how he's showing up as an entrepreneur and a father and a husband. And he said to his spouse, you know, hey, if you were to, you know, give me an honest rating, you know, how would you rate me? How am I doing? And he thought she was going to, you know, kind of pat him on the back and be like, oh, you're doing so great. You're providing so well. And she said, can I be honest? And he's like, yeah. And he started thinking, uh-oh, this may not be good.
That's not good.
Yeah. And she said, sometimes it feels like I'm hanging on the back of a speedboat and you're going so fast in all the things that you're doing. And I am hanging on with the kids for dear life, barely staying on the boat. And I mean, that really hit me hard. And it's like, where in my life is that happening? And how much of it, like when I see myself, I feel like I'm gonna paint a prettier picture than maybe the reality, right? And so I want to be honest with myself. In what ways am I being that speedboat where my family's hanging on for dear life? And so for us, it's been really important that we, at a minimum on an annual basis, do some planning together. This has been, really quite the tradition for my wife and I. We've been doing this for like 13 or 14 years now.
Wow. Let's see.
15 years now. Wow. We've been doing an annual marriage and family planning day. And there are aspects of it that we incorporate in with our daughter. And we do some dreams. What are big dreams for life and different categories? So this isn't just goals. This isn't just like, let's try to achieve this year. I think that's important too. But these are actual dreams. Like, what are things that would really inspire you and light you up? And so this year, I don't think you have to do this, what I'm going to explain, because for a long time, we just carved out a day. We spent a whole day doing this, outline that, we put together over the years. That's kind of changed and evolved. And, it's something that we offer inside of our community. And to those that, have checked out the book, it's one of our free resources. But this thing, we would celebrate with some fun meals. We go to some of our favorite restaurants. We'd make it fun, but it was a full day of like, let's plan, but let's not be too serious, but let's be serious enough that we're going to go through everything. I mean, this year we went to Cabo and, spent a few days there and just had a blast, doing it and planning things, literally marking on the calendar. Okay, this is important to you. Let's go, check this one off the list. We'll do it this weekend. And which couples are the ones that we want to be intentional with? Otherwise, you're just going to go through life as a default, reactionary. Let me put this fire out. Let me do this thing. These people reached out. Let's hang out with them. Versus who do I want to be intentional spending time with? Who do I want to be intentional for me? Just one-on-one. Who are the guys that are most important to me? And who are the couples that we resonate the best with? Where all four parties get along so well, right? Yeah. And it's scheduling that time, scheduling those trips, scheduling those events. And if I can find a way to create an experience that matters, that lasts, that's so much more powerful than almost anything else we can do with that time.
Yeah. Amazing. I'm looking at the planner right now. So I have it in front of me. I brought this up before we pressed record. So if you're listening to this, after you get the book, which 100% of the proceeds are donated, it's amazing. After you get the book and you read the book and you start to hear about these resources that are available, you dive in, you're like, this is incredible. And my wife Kim and I sat down and read through this, and people might be asking, oh, we can do this over a dinner or take a couple hours. And honestly, when I first heard like do this over a day, I'm like, a day? And I start reading through all the questions, and it's really, really well laid out. And the questions, this is going to take you a day. It might take you longer to do this if you do it right. And so I am glad that you said that, take the time, be intentional, do this, ask the hard questions. There's questions here that are fun that lead into it, the dream, the vision casting. But then there's some hard questions that I think as men, sometimes we shy away from the hard things, don't we? We like to just keep those hard things or the things that make us uncomfortable a little inside, like keep that inside to us. And we're like, oh, I'll just drip deliver this over time. And it doesn't work because it just builds instead of drips out. And so this gives a framework. If you're listening to this, this planner gives a framework to how you don't drip it, but you let it out in a way that's healthy and effective and will be beneficial for you and your family. And it's just one of the free resources you get when you pick up the Lifestyle Investor book.
If a day is intimidating to you, don't do that. Yeah, literally pick and choose from it. Star a few things that would be really meaningful conversation with you and your spouse, and then just do that. So it doesn't have to be so comprehensive. It can be, but I would say whatever time you can commit to part of it, to even, you know, a few questions, I think will be really fruitful for your marriage, for your relationship, even for planning things with the kids and, you know, just what the family unit is going to become over time.
Yeah, amazing. Justin, there's one question I ask every guest who comes on, every dad who comes on, and I'm excited to ask you this. What is one area of growth that you are excited about right now as a dad or as a husband that you're diving into?
Gosh, just one. I feel like I'm always trying to tackle a handful of things. You know, as a dad, it's really trying to create, we can call them rites of passage, but I actually want to even shift it to like creating lifelong experiences that my daughter's going to remember that also teach some really good lessons. So what are the things that I can do that can help her grow up to be a responsible woman? How can I treat her? What are some of the ways that I can show affection and model what a strong marriage looks like? What are some of the places that we can go together to have some cool experiences that she'll remember forever, but also create the time and the space to have deep, real conversation, you know, about real life things, and let her know at any point in life, she can always come back to me and ask me whatever question, however tough it is. So that's something I'm constantly thinking about because I know I got 7 years.
I know. It's going to go by in a flash.
It is. And I always remember in the back of my mind that someone's watching. So in my relationship with my wife, I want to do my best in that relationship to honor my wife. But the byproduct is my daughter sees a very healthy marriage.
Yeah.
The better job I do, the better equipped she's going to be, the better expectations she's going to have, the you know, better of a match and you know, man and leader she's going to find if I can model it. So I need to show up every day. And so I feel like the clock's ticking for me and I need to keep sharpening, you know, my axe every single day.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think that's a call to action to all the guys listening to this right now who are raising daughters, for sure, is that we're setting an example and to be mindful of that. Thanks, Justin. Justin, I appreciate you being here. If guys are listening to this, women are listening to this on behalf of their husbands, and they're going to pass it along because that happens. Where can they learn more about you? Where can they pick up your book? And what do you have coming up that we can look forward to?
Well, there's a number of things. I mean, if you go to lifestyleinvestor.com, you can find everything that we do. So, we've got like an online course, we've got master classes, one on mobile home park investing. We got a couple on passive income. We just launched our tax strategy masterclass. This thing has been super hot and we're excited about it. We've got, you know, a couple different masterminds. You know, there's really a ton of different things. I've got a blog, I've got a podcast, I've got the book. You can get the book. We've got a way that you can buy the book on the website and you know, get it for free, pay the shipping. You can go to Amazon, you can get it there. You know, Amazon might be the better route because it creates more proceeds to be able to donate. And if you like it, leave a, you know, review. But what I wanted to offer your audience is something that we just started doing not too long ago, which are these consultation calls. So if anyone is kind of like, hey, what's the next step? Where do I go from here? We've got a team that can actually do a consultation with you to let you know what it might look like, what might the next best move be for you to pursue financial freedom and kind of move. You know, what I always say at the end of my podcast is take a step in the direction towards a life by design, not a life by default. So if you go to lifestyleinvestor.com/consultation, you can meet with someone on our team.
Amazing. Justin, thank you so much for taking time away from your family to do this with us today. Can't wait for it to go live. It's going to impact a lot of people's lives.
Oh, this is perfect timing. I literally just heard our door open and my family is home, like literally in this moment that you are wrapping things up. So perfect timing. Always a pleasure connecting with you, Cam. I think you do a great job. I love what you stand for and the things you're sharing. I think your messaging is great, even from a fitness standpoint, you know, to not have the dad bod and to, you know, when you have the physical part down, it bleeds into the other areas where you can show up with energy. There's so much that you talk about and share that I think is so valuable. So I hope your listeners, your audience knows how special you are and how great the content you have is, because there are not a lot of people talking about the important things you're talking about here.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me today on this episode of the Dad's Making a Difference podcast. I hope you found value in today's show. And if it made a positive impact on you, please share it with someone you know, leave a 5-star review, and subscribe so you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. And if you are a father listening to this right now, who is driven to build a life of significance, to truly make a difference in the life of your family, in your business, and in the community around you, go to dmdmastermind.com to learn more about the Dad's Making a Difference Mastermind, a mastermind group for fathers that provides men with the skills, the connections, the accountability, the proven steps, and the brotherhood to truly become a dad making a difference. I'm Cam Hall. Thank you for spending time with me today, and I will see you on the next episode of the DMD Podcast.